14. Jar of Flies. Strabo hated the laundry facility. When he'd first been shipped to Coghive 7, 18 standard months earlier, laundry had been his work detail. He'd sweated for hours among the giant washers and dryers, toiling alongside malfunctioning droids and inmates through mountains of gore-soaked uniforms and sheets. Assigned to him seemingly at random, the sweat, the stink, and the back-breaking monotony of it had been worse than death. But it hadn't lasted long. Soon enough, he'd risen through the ranks of the Gravity Massive, strangling the former leader and moving effortlessly into his place. And as a result, he hadn't had to come back down here in almost a year. Even so, from the moment he'd led the rest of the Gravity Massive inside, the stinging astringency of the cramped chamber was all too familiar to his nose, like a horrible kind of homecoming. The machines were quiet now, shut down for the night, but the faintly howling silence was somehow even more haunting.
"Don't see the point," he growled. "Coming down here in the middle of the night like this."
He looked over his shoulder at the Gravity Massive member standing behind him.
"You sure this was the message?"
"That's what it said."
The inmate known as Ishmash was an Alvanian, long-snouted and sharp-toothed, and Strabo's second in command.
"Word came straight from Halcon.
Captain of the guards, call us all the way down here for what? Something they can't tell us topside."
Strabo shook his head.
"The whole thing stinks."
His lieutenant didn't answer. The Nelvanian was a data pirate, shipped here to Coghive 7 on charges of information sabotage. He was not a fighter or a killer by nature, but his combination of loyalty and freaky tech skills had made him indispensable to Strabo and the Gravity Massive, or at least as indispensable as one could be in an environment where any two inmates might be called on at any moment to slaughter each other. Now, Strabo knew, was not the time to raise that point. An hour earlier, Ishmash had informed him that he'd received, via custodial droid, a covert message from CO Halcon, the captain of the guards here in Coghive 7, telling them to bring the entire GM crew, 13 in all, down into the laundry facility for some sort of clandestine summit between gang and guard. Strabo had been running the crew long enough to know that he ignored such a summons at his peril. Halcon probably wouldn't detonate the charges in his heart over such a minor act of disobedience, but the guard could make his life miserable in a thousand other ways. Everything from cutting his rations to putting him in full lockdown until he was climbing the walls. So here they were, the Gravity Massive en masse, making their way among the chemical vats and tubes, pumping liters of industrial detergents, solvents, along with the liquid cryogens necessary to cool the superconductor power load running to the massive washers and dryers.
"How long we supposed to wait here anyway?"
Strabo grumbled, casting his gaze alongside the washers and dryers, their gaping 70-centimeter bores standing open and motionless in the gloom.
"Did Halcon even say what he wanted with us?"
"No."
"Not even a clue?"
"He told me to come down." Ishmash shrugged. "That's all."
"Son of a Varga knows he can't touch us, right?"
Strabo said.
"On account of..."
Suddenly, he stopped talking. He'd just detected the none-too-stealthy tap-tap-tap of steel-toed boots approaching in the half-darkness from the far side of the alcove. There was only one point of entrance to the facility, which meant...
"They're already here waiting for us." "Halcon!"
Strabo bellowed out, his strident voice only slightly dampened by the claustrophobic confines of the room.
We're here. You want to tell us what's so important this time of night?
There was a solid whump as the hatchway sealed shut behind them. And by the time he realized what was happening, Strabo had already seen who was in front of them. Not guards. Bone kings. And in front of them, Vass Nailhead himself, his angry, bald scalp bulging toward the gravity massive like a pustulent sore. Under the circumstances, Nailhead appeared as surprised as Strabo felt.
What the?
He was saying, striding forward, already close enough that Strabo could count all 16 kings clustered up behind him.
You!
Nailhead!
Strabo glared back at him, the name twisting from his lips like a curse. In his peripheral vision, he was aware of Ishmash and the rest of the massive troops grimly preparing themselves for battle, pulling out short-handled wire scourges, rope darts, and flying claws from inside their uniforms. These chain weapons, fashioned from scavenged materials, sharpened and honed in secret, were the preferred pain-inflicting tools of the massive, and were always kept close at hand.
What are you doing here? Looking for a rematch?
If that's what you want,
Nailhead said, and his eyes flicked over Strabo's shoulder to Ishmash.
Got a message to bring the kings down here,
the Nelvanian said.
Halcon sent it to me through a utility droid. Us too,
Nailhead said.
What?
Strabo squinted at him.
That can't.
The rest of the sentence was lost behind a sibilant whoosh from the tall containment vats along the wall. Both gangs spun around to stare at the source of the sound, and when he recognized what it was, Strabo felt his blood run cold. Thick clouds of freezing cold vapor were pouring out of the tanks, rising around them, sucking the oxygen out of the air.
Cryogens,
he thought, his mind flashing back to the warnings he'd received about the liquid nitrogen and helium detergents stored inside the tanks, how any sort of leak or breach would literally suck the oxygen from the lungs of anyone unlucky enough to be trapped inside.
Exhaust fans in the ceiling. The toggle switch overhead.
It was already too late. Strabo felt his trachea clamp down to a pinhole, choking on what should have been air, but instead torn to the delicate inner lining of his throat like a swarm of wasps. His lungs crumpled like empty leather sacks inside his chest, the strength draining from his body all at once as the floor swung up to hit him in the face like a huge blunt fist. His eyes and nose were on fire, his lungs trembling on the verge of revolt. He could no more climb up to activate the exhaust fans than he could draw in another unobstructed breath. From somewhere in front of him, there came a loose and thready shriek. Strabo hoisted his head up and looked out through tear-soaked eyes. Nailhead and the Bone Kings were crumpling, clutching their chests, hacking and wheezing, falling to the floor in piles among members of the gravity massive. In less than 30 seconds, the cryo leak had accomplished what no measure of diplomacy ever could, uniting both gangs in a desperate fraternity of oxygen debt. Strabo saw his own people collapsing next to the kings, side by side, brought low in their final moments, as indistinguishable as flies in a killing jar.
By the moons of Renok, we're all going to die here,
he thought wildly. A thumping primordial self-defense mechanism kicked in, more powerful than anything on the conscious level, superseding all other instincts.
Get out! Get out! Get out! Now!
Stumbling backward, elbowing his way violently through the ranks of his own people, Strabo groped his way in the direction of the exit. only to find it sealed. Something rammed his arm, and he realized there was someone next to him, a large, frantic shape. It was Nailhead. The bearded man had fought his way over, too, and was jerking even more desperately on the manual release lever, pounding on it, trying to get out. His once-imposing face was a hairy, sweat-slick moon of terror. From just above the hatchway, Strabo felt something take hold of his arm. He looked up. The Zabrak, the one called Jagannath, was glaring down at both of them, his nose and mouth protected by some kind of jury-rigged respirator. Strabo just stared at him, uncertain if what he saw was real or a side effect of the cryogens. He didn't have more than a moment to ponder the possibilities before the Zabrak tossed him aside, striding among the center of the alcove to where the open cryogen vats were spraying out great gunmetal-colored clouds more intensely than ever.
"Switch them off!"
Strabo wanted to shout, though at this point his voice was a pale memory.
"You've got to!"
But Jagannath was already in motion. Using the rungs embedded directly in the wall, he drew himself up and climbed effortlessly to the top of the tank, reached across, and closed two sets of valves. He toggled another switch, and Strabo watched in wonder as the blades of the overhead fans began swinging to life, sucking the cryogens out, venting fresh oxygen into the sealed room. After a moment, the air began to clear. The fans spun on. Strabo watched them swirling round and round as slowly, terribly slowly, the burning knots inside his own lungs began to loosen and disappear. The Zabrak switched off the fans again. Silence fell.
"Hear me."
Strabo wiped his eyes, coughed and spat, and finally looked up. Around him, on either side, kings and massive members alike were gaping up at the Zabrak, with identical expressions of desperate, half-conscious wonder.
"What the cock do you want?"
Nailhead managed, but his voice was just a raspy, hollowed-out ghost of its former self. Jagannath ignored him.
"What happened here, this cryo leak, was no accident. The captain of the guards, Halcon, did this. I overheard him planning it. That's why he called you all down here."
Nobody said anything. It might have been the suddenness of what had just transpired, but neither gang raised the first murmur of dissent.
"He wants to wipe out the gangs,"
the Zabrak said.
"All of you. You've become more trouble than you're worth. Warden Blur wouldn't have let him get away with it all at once. Some of you still have upcoming matches to fulfill. So Halcon was going to make it look like an accident."
Silence.
"I didn't have to save you,"
Jagannath told them.
"I could just as easily have let you die down here. And every one of you."
His yellow eyes moved across both gangs, taking in their blotchy pale faces.
"You all saw how your so-called leaders behaved just now, turning their backs on you to save themselves, clawing like dogs at the door to get out. They couldn't have cared less."
A collective snarl came out of the crowd. Strabo flung up his hands in an instinctive posture of self-defense. Members of the Gravity Massive and Bone Kings turned to glare at him and Nailhead, the pain and panic in their eyes already changing from accusatory suspicion to outrage rage.
"He's right!"
someone shouted.
"I saw it too!"
"They led us here."
"It was them!"
"Hold it!"
Strabo took a step back and bumped into Nailhead, who already had his back to the wall. The other inmates jammed in toward them, even closer. Izmash's lips had drawn back in a snarl to reveal sharpened canines and incisors. Strabo felt a half dozen hands coming from a half dozen different directions, groping to take hold of him, ready to rip him apart.
The time of gangs is coming to an end here,
Jagannath's voice said from up above.
Halcon won't rest until he's destroyed you all.
He can't do that!
Strabo swung at the gang members, kings and gravity massive alike.
We are protected! Because of what we do, the way we serve Radik!
His voice broke off. All the inmates who had been about to attack him just a split second earlier took a step back, creating an open space around him, as if they'd just found out Strabo was infected with some horrifically contagious disease. Even Nailhead moved away from him. Jagannath stared down at him.
What about Radik?
Strabo lowered his head.
How do the gangs work for him? What do they do?
Strabo looked at Ishmash, but the Nalvanian refused to meet his gaze.
None of them would.
It was over for him. Strabo realized that he'd gone from their leader to a complete outcast in the time it took to mention that single name.
Tell me,
Jagannath said, casting one more glance across the two gangs before directing his gaze back at Strabo. The unspoken message was clear enough.
Your reign here is over. Only I can protect you now.
Strabo opened his mouth and snapped it shut again. When he finally managed to summon his voice, the words came out involuntarily, as if jerked from his lips by an invisible hook.
The parts, he said. The weapons components.
What about them?
They come smuggled in on the supply ships. We each get one piece, small enough to tuck into our uniform and hide in our cell. Nobody knows what anybody else gets. Nobody knows how they fit together. Nobody knows where they go and how they get there.
How does Radik get them from you?
No one knows. They just disappear.
Jagannath glared at him.
Disappear?
It's all I know,
Strabo said.
And he pays us the same way, with the quipus.
He pulled up his pant leg to reveal the string of knots tied around his ankle.
They're coded to a hidden account, a form of payment that the guards can't access.
The Zabrak turned to survey the rest of the room.
I know that you all work for Radik in some capacity, which means that you already serve a common purpose. Now, you'll all serve one leader.
He straightened up.
Me.
Never!
Off to his left, Strabo saw Nailhead lunge forward with his fists clenched, eyes blazing, and realized that he himself had also stepped up to confront this indignity head-on, as some animal part of him refused to bow before the newly appointed leader. The Zabrak reacted faster than either he or Nailhead could. Seizing Nailhead from behind, the one called Jagannath hooked his fingers into the flesh-eater's nostrils and yanked his head straight back to expose his throat before driving his fist into the cartilage of Nailhead's windpipe, dropping him to the floor in a wheezing, debilitated heap. Strabo saw the Zabrak pivot, shooting his foot straight up so that it hit Strabo in the solar plexus, leaving him doubled over and sucking air. Darkness was closing in. Strabo fought to shake it off. Jagannath's voice seemed to be coming from very far away, but there was a cold ferocity to it that would not be ignored.
You work for me now,
the Zabrak said.
You can each maintain your loyalty to your crews, but as of now, I'm putting myself in charge at the top. I will mediate between you and the guards.
He turned to Nailhead, staring straight into the Flesh Eater's eyes.
Also, from this point on, there will be no more harassment of the inmate known as Zero. Is that understood? That goes for both gangs.
Nobody said anything. Strabo stared at his feet. For the moment, at least, he couldn't bring himself to look at the other members of the gang he used to run. When he looked up again, the Zabrak was gone.
XV. Limerge.
Rise up, my apprentice.
At the sound of that voice, Maul's pulse quickened. He rose to his feet and stared at the holographic image of his master. The one called Zero had been as good as his word. Less than 2 hours after Maul had dealt with the gangs, he'd received a coded message to come here to a remote corner of the prison morgue, to one of the empty chambers designed to hold inmates' corpses for disposal. It had been waiting here for him. The transmitter, fully assembled and functional. And now, the image of Sidious stood before him, the Sith Lord's yellow eyes blazing deep within the cowl of his cloak. His Zayd cloth robe swept around him, the coarse fabric rustling audibly as Sidious raised his hand. In the background, small details of the top of Limerge Tower's interior were clearly visible, and Maul was momentarily taken aback by the vivid resolution of the image. Scavenged or not, Zero's technology was of impressively high quality.
Master,
he said aloud, or tried to, but the word stuck in his throat.
You look well, my apprentice. I have been monitoring your progress among the inhabitants of Coghive 7 with great interest.
Yes, Master.
I observe that regardless of the circumstances, throughout these bouts with other inmates, you have taken great care not to reveal your true powers as a Sith.
Was there a twinge of sarcasm in his voice?
That much is quite abundantly evident.
You are referring to the most recent bout.
Maul hesitated.
The Wampa
proved to be something of a challenge, yes, so I saw. Perhaps you have found yourself wishing that you might be permitted to draw unreservedly on the power of the dark side, or to be allowed the use of your saber staff.
Sensing a trap, Maul demurred.
My strength comes from within.
Does it indeed?
Sidious gave him a long, unreadable look.
I wonder.
Master,
pride and self-regard are not accolades to be earned only once. The power of the Sith must prove itself stronger with every test. Resting on your accomplishments now will only inhibit your ability to fully exploit the resources of anger and discipline that lie within you.
Yes, Master.
Protecting your identity and the true purpose of your mission will be meaningless if you die before you achieve it.
Sidious paused, gazing at him piercingly.
Do my words sting? Perhaps you find my assessment unfair.
No.
The Sith Lord drew back.
I expect much from you, Darth Maul. Only because I alone grasp your true potential for greatness in the dark side.
Thank you, Master. My only wish...
Enough!
Sidious's face went abruptly cold.
Your restraint, training, and discipline will only take you so far. What progress have you made in locating Iram Radik?
I have intensified my search. I brought the prison gangs to heel, and have made inroads in discovering the methods of their service to Radik.
Maul met his master's gaze.
It will not be long now.
He paused, then pressed on. Perhaps if you are able to confide in me the true purpose of our plans. Sidious raised one hand, cutting the words off.
You have been provided with all the information you require to complete your mission. For now, all you need to know is that we are continuing with our work to destabilize the Outer Rim, fueling insurgency and separatism.
The Sith Lord drew in a breath and released it, holding Maul's gaze with what might have been sympathy.
Your reputation of loyalty to our cause is firmly established. I am not oblivious to the fact that you have been disappointed by your role in our plans up till now, that you may have craved a more pivotal role in the Eriadu operation, for example.
Maul tried to suppress his sense of surprise and failed. How had Sidious known of that? After his master had used security droids to covertly orchestrate the assassination of 6 Directorate members at the Eriadu Trade Summit and attempted to kill Chancellor Valorum, Maul had been unable to understand why Sidious hadn't involved him personally in the operation. He assumed that he'd hidden his disappointment well, buried it deep inside him, where even he had been able to overlook it. Yet his master had seen through him.
Suffice it to say that what you are achieving now with Iram Radik will far surpass any smaller errand that I could have given you.
Yes, Master.
Good then. Rise and go forth. Take what is rightfully ours. The dark side is with you.
Maul tried to respond, but the vision in front of him, of his master and the debris-cluttered floor of the Limerge building, was already starting to fade. Stepping away from the Holovid unit, Darth Sidious opened his eyes and crossed the floor of the Limerge tower to the turbolift, his mind already teeming with a collision of thoughts. As with any mission involving Maul, the situation that Sidious was creating on Coghive 7 was not entirely stable. The Sith Lord harbored no delusions about his apprentice's ambition or pride, or how closely those elements were linked to the anger that was constantly sweltering inside his apprentice, fermenting as Maul's power continued to intensify. Locked in unswerving allegiance to their cause, the Zabrak's heart was a reactor of pure, distilled rage.
And that rage will serve him well.
Yes. When Sidious reflected back on the years of training that Maul had endured, proving himself repeatedly against the worst that the galaxy had to offer, he felt an unmistakable pride in his apprentice's strength and fortitude. By definition, Coghive 7 was an environment that no one survived. Yet Maul had already established himself as a dominant presence without relying on the Force. Despite what he'd said to Maul, Sidious felt an increasing respect for what his apprentice continued to achieve. In the fullness of time, such abilities would continue to serve him better than he could possibly imagine. By the time he left the building and walked out to hail a skycab to the Senate District, The Sith Lord's concerns had abated. The hour was yet early, and his schedule for the day as Palpatine was already full. The air taxi darted down toward him, whirring to a halt, and as the door opened, he realized with a start that the cab wasn't empty. Hego Damask was waiting for him inside. "Darth Sidious," Damask said, gesturing to the empty seat beside him. "Will you join me?" Palpatine flicked his eyes toward the air taxi's cockpit, but Damask gave him a reassuring nod.
"I've rendered the surveillance equipment inoperative," the moon said, "so that we may speak freely. As equals."
"Of course." Without hesitating, Darth Sidious slipped inside next to the moon, his expression revealing just the right tincture of pleasant surprise. "It's always good to see you under any circumstances."
"Yes."
Behind the transpirator mask, Darth Plagueis offered what might have been a faint smile.
"I know we had plans to meet later in Monument Plaza for our usual stroll, but something's come up and I had to alter my schedule at the last minute. I thought it best that we meet now."
He turned to Sidious and cast a passing glance back at the Limerge building.
"I take it that you've been in touch with the Zabrak."
"As a matter of fact, I just..."
"I recall you mentioning that you've dispatched him to Coghive 7 to find this elusive weapons dealer."
"Iram Radik, yes."
Sidious was careful to sound as casual as possible, although inside he was already puzzled. Darth Plagueis knew only the broadest generalities about Darth Sidious's ongoing work to destabilize the Outer Rim planets and orchestrate the Galactic Civil War. He rarely asked specific questions about where the weapons were coming from, or how exactly Sidious intended to use them to facilitate the grand plan.
"This Radik?"
Plagueis continued in the same conversational tone as he gazed out the window at the approaching avenue of the Core Founders.
"Is rumored to be one of the most powerful arms dealers in the galaxy."
"Radik is as dangerous as he is unpredictable."
Sidious was aware of an unwelcome warmth beginning to climb upward through the back of his neck, enveloping his cheeks and forehead.
"Which is why I sent Maul to assassinate him."
"I see."
Sidious leaned slightly forward in an attempt to catch Plagueis' eye.
"I've been meaning to inform you. My mission there..."
"Is something I have absolute confidence in your ability to execute."
Plagueis placed a hand on Sidious' shoulder.
"I must commend you on your foresight and commitment to our ultimate purpose, Darth Sidious. As you might have guessed, with the increasing demands of my own private pursuits on Sojourn, I find it profoundly liberating that I do not need to monitor the particular means with which you uphold our united goal."
"Yes, of course."
Sidious regarded him speculatively. What exactly was Plagueis telling him? Did the moon harbor his own dark suspicions about what Sidious had hoped to achieve in sending Maul to Coghive 7? Or was Plagueis simply probing him for more detail?
"Well..."
Plagueis had already settled back again with a nearly inaudible sigh.
"I suppose this is goodbye for now."
The air taxi docked, and Sidious realized that he'd arrived at the Senate Rotunda. The cab's hatch released with a faint sigh, and as he began to step out, he felt Plagueis' hand take hold of his wrist.
"There is one other thing,"
he said, with that same tone of cordial detachment.
"I thought you should know that all your talk of Coghive 7 piqued my interest."
"Indeed."
Sidious felt something tighten inside his throat.
"How so?"
"I've spoken to a contact at the IBC and asked them to dispatch a financial consultant there under the auspices of a routine quarterly audit. a certain Vesto Slipher. He'll be reporting directly to me.
Behind the mask, Plagueis' smile was pure diplomatic graciousness.
Perhaps I can help you ferret out this elusive arms dealer after all.
Sidious felt a faint knot tightening in his throat. That's extremely thoughtful of you.
I know we are together on this,
Plagueis said.
As equals.
Plagueis withdrew his hand. He was still gazing out at Sidious when the air taxi's hatch closed between them, and it lifted away from the Senate Plaza, leaving Sidious standing there alone.